This morning to 1 Kings chapter 17, please. 1 Kings chapter 17. Last Sunday morning we began a series entitled A Man for Our Time, and that's where I want to continue this morning. 1 Kings chapter 17, and I want to talk to you this morning about boot camp at Cherith. Boot camp at Cherith. Most of us here couldn't survive boot camp. I certainly couldn't, and by the looks of some of you, you couldn't survive it either. But that's what I want to talk to you about. Boot camp is really a place of discipline. It's a place of military training, and that's where God brought Elijah to a place called Cherith. Look at chapter 17 and verse 1, please. Chapter 17 and verse number 1. And Elijah, who was of the inhabitants of Gilead, said unto Ahab, As the Lord God of Israel liveth, before whom I stand, there shall not be dew nor rain these years, but according to my word. And the word of the Lord came unto him, saying, Get thee hence, and turn thee eastward, and hide thyself by the brook Cherith, that is before Jordan. And it shall be that thou shalt drink of the brook, and I have commanded the ravens to feed thee there. Notice that word there. It's most important. You would do well to underline it. So he went and did according to the word of the Lord. You can see from verses 2 and 3 there's an assignment here. The word of the Lord came unto him, saying, Elijah, get to Cherith. That is before Jordan. You can see that there's an assignment. He's told where to go. You can see that there's a concealment. For the word Cherith means hidden. God's going to hide his servant. And so I want you to see these four words that are flowing out of this passage. The first word is the word assignment. The second word is the word concealment. Look at verse 4 again. And it shall be that thou shalt drink of the brook, and I have commanded the ravens to feed thee there. The third word is the word of encouragement. Are you getting them? Assignment, concealment, encouragement. They are steps in God's training of Elijah at army camp, at boot camp. Look at verse 5. So he went and did according unto the word of the Lord, for he went and dwelt by the brook Cherith, that is before Jordan. And the ravens brought him bread and flesh in the morning, and bread and flesh in the evening, and he drank of the brook. And it came to pass after a while that the brook dried up because there had been no rain in the land. You can see there's a development. Four stages in Elijah's training. An assignment, a concealment, an encouragement, and a development. Now I'll embellish that just in a moment or two. Wonder, have you ever heard the statement, I'm going to cut you down to size? Maybe that statement has been made to you, or perhaps that statement has been made by you. It's the kind of thing that you would hear at army camp. It's the kind of thing that you would hear at a military camp. It's the kind of thing that you would hear at a training camp of new recruits where discipline is very harsh. It's the kind of statement that would be delivered with passion by someone you would quickly obey. You see, at boot camp, a civilian is molded into a soldier through the rigors of push-ups and sit-ups and running and marching and double time, courtesy of the drill sergeant. You see, at army camp, the control of your life is left at the induction center, and the new recruit is molded into military fitness at another's hand. As I have said, I'm not sure how many of us in this building would survive it. You see, it's a time of brutal discipline. It's a time of unending work. It's a time of regimented training. It's a time of cold fear. It's a time of acute loneliness. It is an army camp. It is in boot camp that soldiers are born. A soldier would never be able to serve on the battlefield unless he has been through the military training of boot camp. Here, a soldier's self-will is stripped away. Here, they learn to follow their superior's order without a question. They learn even to follow their leader, even to death if necessary. You won't learn to survive on a battlefield by bubbling around in a jacuzzi and ringing for room service. Now, what is true in military life, it is true to a certain extent in spiritual life. When we first believe on Christ, we become soldiers in God's army. But we aren't really fit for the battle unless we have had some kind of military basic spiritual training. Even Elijah, if he was going to be a useful instrument in the hands of God, he had to be cut down to size. A.W. Tozer, one of his famous statements was this: it's doubtful that God can bless a man greatly until he has hurt him deeply. It is doubtful that God can bless a man greatly until he has hurt him deeply. The exact location of Cherith is a bit uncertain. Some feel it was east of the River Jordan, putting Elijah in territory that would have been very familiar to him. We do know that its name is derived from an original verb, charath, which means to cut off. It means to cut down. And the word is used in both senses in the Old Testament. Cut off from others. Cut down to size as one might fell timber. You see, this man who was the representative of God, this man who was the spokesman for God before the wicked apostate king, would now be cut off from all involvement and activities that might prove stimulating to him. At the same time, Elijah was going to be cut down to size. He was going to be placed in an uncomfortable situation to force him to trust God for every day's need. And so this great prophet Elijah went through boot camp, which effectively turned him from a Tishbite into a man of God. Wonder, did you notice the contrast between the beginning and the end of chapter 17 ever? Look at verse 1. It says, "And Elijah the Tishbite." That's the first verse. Look at the final verse in the chapter. "Now the woman said to Elijah, 'Now by this I know that thou art a man of God.'" He came out of nowhere. He suddenly appeared before an apostate king. He came to deliver the message of God. But by the end of chapter 17, through his basic training experiences at Cherith, he's addressed as the man of God. He has come from the Tishbite to being the man of God, all because of what he went through at Cherith. The life of Elijah can be summarized in two words, in two phrases. If you look at verse number 3 of chapter 17, the Lord said, "Get thee hence and turn thee eastward and hide thyself." Underscore those two words, hide thyself. That's his private ministry. Look at chapter 18 and verse 1. "It came to pass after many days that the word of the Lord came to Elijah in the third year, saying, 'Show thyself.'" Hide thyself, that's his private ministry. Show thyself, that's his public ministry. Now, I'm here to tell you this morning that most people who are involved in Christian service like the latter. They like to show themselves. There are few who like to hide themselves. And yet here we notice, first of all, an assignment, the word of the Lord. An assignment, the word of the Lord. Look at verse 2. And the word of the Lord came to him, saying, Get thee hence, and turn thee eastward, and hide thyself by the brook Cherith, that is before Jordan. Remember, when Elijah comes on the scene, he comes to a nation that had failed God, and forsaken God, and forgotten God. You remember that when he went into the palace of the apostate King Ahab, he did so to inform Ahab and his painted wife Jezebel of three things. One, God is displeased. Two, Baal is defeated. Three, there's going to be a drought. I mean, can you picture Elijah as he leaves Ahab's palace, heads down the street? He's got an axe knapsack on his back, and someone calls out, Where are you going, Elijah? He says, I'm out of this place. I'm heading for the hills. Where are you going to? I'm going to some place called Cherith. Cherith, where's that? He said, I don't know. But there's a small brook running through it. God's going to show me. I think it's somewhere east of the Jordan River. And what are you going to do there, Elijah? He says, I'm going to drink of the brook. And how are you going to be fed? God says, He's going to send birds that are going to feed me. Isn't it interesting that this specific task, job, errand, was given to Elijah at a specific time? Did you notice that God never told Elijah what the second step was until he had taken the first step? God had told Elijah to go to the prophet Ahab, and when Elijah got to the palace, God had told him what to say. And after he said it, now Elijah, you go down to the brook Cherith and I'll provide for you there. And God didn't tell him what the next step was until the brook dried up. Why? That Elijah might be kept in continual dependence on God. It was A.W. Pink who said, God doesn't grant further revelations until there's been a compliance with those already received. We've got to learn to trust the Lord one day at a time. You're saying to me this morning, well, Dennis, I've heard that 100 times before. But until you're living it, you haven't heard it enough. You must learn to live today, today. You cannot live tomorrow today. You cannot live next week tomorrow. William Elliot, in his book For the Living of These Days, writes, the reason so many of us are overwrought, tense, distracted, anxious, is that we have never mastered the living of one day at a time. Physically, we live one day at a time. We can't quite help ourselves. But mentally, we live all three tenses at once. It will never work. Is that you? Or have you learned to trust God one day at a time? I want you to see that this command, this duty, this task, this assignment, it came at a specific time. And then look at verse number 2 again. It came to a specific man, not only at a specific time, but to a specific man. And the word of the Lord came unto him. Who? Elijah. In essence, God was saying to Elijah, you need to get out of the spotlight, son. You need to come down to the mountains alone with me, where you can hear my voice, where you can imbibe my spirit. We need more time together, Elijah, and you need more training. The good news is this. Without one moment's hesitation, Elijah obeyed. He didn't even ask why. You see, my friends, the will of God, and much nonsense has been talked about it, but the will of God is not something for us to understand. The will of God is something for us to undertake. Will you look at verse 5? He went and did according to the word of the Lord, for he went and dwelt by the brook Cherith that is before Jordan. You know, it's one thing, and some of you have done this. You've headed off into the mountains. You've headed off into the forest, and you've been gone camping. You know, it's one thing to take a day or two into the beaten track, or maybe go camping for the weekend, or even further, to spend 2 or 3 weeks backpacking in the wilderness. Such adventures offer the delights of being away from all the problems of home life, with the comfort of knowing that you're still in touch with reality, that you're going back home. But I tell you, my dear friends, it's another thing to live in the wilderness for an extended time. He goes and he dwells there, possibly for a number of months, possibly for a year. And so God says, Elijah, go there, settle there, live there. And that's what Elijah did. I wonder, would you accept such an assignment from God with immediate obedience? I wonder how many of us would have said, yes, Lord, I trust you completely. I don't need the spotlight of Christian service to survive. Or, my dear friends, do we only enjoy comfortable and active Christianity? Is it not so easy to become addicted to public forum? Is it not so easy to think that we're indispensable to God's plan and God's work? I tell you, there's not one of us who are indispensable. And sometimes we feel the fire of God burning within our souls. And we say, Lord, I'll be your champion. I'll defend your cause. I'll defend your word. And God says, get further back, man. Get lower down. You're too strong. You're too full of yourself for me to use. So God moved Elijah from the public forum to the private haven, from the sunlight of activity to the shadows of obscurity. For notice, secondly, a concealment, the will of the Lord. An assignment, the word of the Lord. A concealment, the will of the Lord. The word hide is interesting. It means to lie hid, to hide oneself, to conceal oneself from anything, to guard. You see, Elijah was sent to Cherith for his own protection. If you skip over, look over for a moment to chapter 18. Here he's meeting Obadiah. Here's what Obadiah says. You remember the Lord hid Elijah for 3 years plus. And he didn't appear. And then eventually God says, show yourself. And he meets Obadiah, who's the servant of Ahab. And Obadiah says, as the Lord thy God liveth, there's no nation or kingdom whither my Lord hath not sent to seek thee. And when they said, he is not here, he took an oath of the kingdom and nation, that they found thee not. I tell you, this apostate king was on the warpath for Elijah. You can think of what his wife was like. I tell you, some of the men are bad, but when you get the women, it's worse. And here's a woman who came, remember we saw from last week, she came from Zidon. She came from the headquarters of apostasy. She wants to bring Baalism into the land, and she wants to obliterate the servant of God. Did you ever think that you'd live to see the day in Ulster when they would be seeking the servants of the Lord? Why the vote in our government in this past week? In Stormont. On same-sex marriage. I tell you, my dear friends, the day is coming when they will seek the servants of the Lord. And Elijah was sent to Cherith for his protection, but also for his training. Look at the praise of this training again. Verse 3, by the brook Cherith. The Hebrew word for brook is the word wadi. The word speaks of a dry creek bed. It's a water course that runs merrily along, located in a valley. And of course, it's filled with water in the rainy season, but it becomes very barren in the dry season. One of those brooks that enter into the River Jordan, that winding river that separates to this day the west bank from the modern state of Jordan. Can you picture it? It's a deep, narrow gorge. It's overhung by steep cliffs. The brook is running merrily along. Why, dear friends, I'm sure if Elijah had been going by his own instincts, Cherith would have been the last place he would have gone to hide myself. Lord, I'm your servant. I'm a prophet. Do you not know that you sent me? You raised me up in days of apostasy. The Lord says, not this time, Elijah. Hide yourself. The word suggests the idea of concealment. For here in solitude, Elijah would wait upon God. He would commune with God. He would talk to God. Is that not one of the most difficult commands to obey? To go off and be alone. To get away from the public spotlight. To draw back. To deliberately remain hidden. It's especially true, and some of you know what I'm talking about, especially those of you who are in public Christian service. It's especially true if you feel comfortable in the limelight. You're an up kind of person, an upfront kind of person. You're one who's gifted with leadership, a get the job done kind of person. And God says, hide yourself, get alone, man, get out of the limelight. Get away from those things that satisfy your human pride and ego and go and live by the brook. Wonder, has the Lord been saying that to you? Maybe sickness. Maybe illness. Maybe a change in your circumstances has forced a change in your life. And could it be this morning that you're sitting at the Cherith of disappointed hopes and shattered dreams? The place of this training. And then will you notice very quickly the price of this training? You see, there was a price to be paid socially. You remember what Cherith means? It means cut off. You know, staying at the Raven Hotel's great. It really is. But then the ravens aren't much conversationalists. And for Elijah to be used of God, he had to get away alone with God. Remember Moses? Spent one third of his life at the backside of the desert. Paul spent 3 years in Arabia. Isn't it interesting that our blessed Lord spent 30 years in obscurity for 3 years ministry? We spend 3 years in preparation for 30 years ministry. Christ spent 30 years obscurity for 3 years ministry. John Welch had his Cherith. He spent the day ill spent if he didn't spend 8 to 10 hours alone with God. David Brainerd, if you've read his story, spent his Cherith in the backwoods of North America. Christmas Evans had his Cherith among the lonely hills and the lonely journeys of Wales. My friends, if we would do much for God, we must be much with God. Let me say this to you. You can't go to bed at all hours of the night and expect to get up fresh in the morning to meet with God. And some of those social occasions that you enjoy might be sweet, but I'll tell you, they're not as precious as meeting with God in the morning. That's my first appointment, meeting with God in the morning. There had to be a price that was paid socially. Something else. There had to be a price that was paid spiritually. You see, Cherith means, not only does it mean cut off, it means cut down. And you see, if God was going to use Elijah, he had to cut into Elijah. He had to cut down Elijah and prepare him for future service. Now, if you and I had written the script, it might have unfolded a little differently. As soon as Elijah appears at King Ahab's palace, he shows up and declares the word of the Lord, and he comes out of the palace. I would have had him racing up to Carmel to topple down and tear down and throw down every idol of Baal. He already had the eye of the tiger. I would have turned him loose, but God says, hide thyself. Why? We must be taught what F.B. Meyer calls the value of the hidden life. Cherith must come before Carmel. The cross must come before the crown. The trial must come before the triumph. The wilderness must come before the wonder. I tell you this, a man who's to take a high position before God, a high position before man, must take a low place before God. And there's no better way of cutting a man down to size than taking him out of a situation where he thought that he was indispensable. Wonders the Lord brought you to some church. You're too strong for God to use. You're too full of yourself for God to use. Do you think you're indispensable to the work of God? Arthur Pink says, have you used your service as a pedestal on which to display yourself? Isn't that a challenging statement? Have we used our service as a pedestal on which to display ourselves? I wonder, does God need to bury our self-life in the darkness of some Cherith? Now, are you beginning to see the steps? Assignment, the word of the Lord. Concealment, the will of the Lord. Here's the third one, encouragement, the wealth of the Lord. I mean, can God furnish a table in the wilderness? Well, the Lord says, for every beast of the forest is mine and the cattle on 1,000 hills. Isn't it interesting to notice the chain of events in this passage? Verse 3, the divine command. Verse 4, the divine provision. And it shall be that thou shalt drink of the brook, and I've commanded the ravens to feed thee there. God's encouragement for Elijah. And that you'll notice this provision was conditional. Will you mark the word there in verse number 4? There. That's the key word. You see, the place of God's appointment is the place of God's provision. In other words, you've got to be in the place where God wants you to be if God's going to meet your needs. You see, God told Elijah to get out of here, the palace, and go there to the brook. And if he went there, then the water would meet his need, and the ravens would supply his need. I'm sure that to Elijah, things look far more promising here, but God said that he would only meet his needs there. Are you there? You say, where's there? There's the place that God has planned for your life. There's the perfect sovereign will of God for your life. There is where you'll find things that you won't find here. There are things, certain things, that can only be there. Steve Wagers reminds us, for Elijah there was a brook, later a widow's house. For Noah there was an ark. For Joseph there was a pit, and then a prison, and then a palace. For Moses, there was a basket of bulrushes. For Daniel, there was a prayer room that led to the lion's den. For the three Hebrew boys, there was a burning fiery furnace. For Ruth, there was a field owned by Boaz. For David, there was the throne of Israel. For Paul, there was a prison cell. For Christ, there was a cross. Now let me ask you this morning, are you here out of God's will? Or are you there in God's will? You see, there is the place of provision. There is the place of God's provision. There is the place of God's plan. There is the place of God's protection. There is the place of God's providence. There is the place that's unlike any other around this place. So there has to be the place. And my dear friend, if you're not there, you need to get out of here, because you'll never know the fullness of God's plan and power and provision until you get there. I ask you again, are you there? And so God's supply was conditional, but something else, it was supernatural. I mean, twice a day, Elijah got a miracle supply. He'd get up in the morning. I try to picture him. He'd get up in the morning and he'd go down to the brook. And he had no electric shower. And he would just wash his face, and then he would kneel down and say, Lord, for what I am about to receive, Lord, I'm truly thankful. And then he would lift up his eyes to the sky, and he'd see a flock of birds coming toward them. And they're winding their way through the sky toward them. They'd paid their daily visit to the baker's shop and to the butcher's shop. They even knew which was the kosher butcher in town. And they'd picked up Elijah's supply. Fancy that. They were probably taking Elijah's supply off an apostate king's table And every day they brought him a miracle. I think it's Ronnie McCracken who has written a book, hasn't he? On the raven. You ever experienced any of God's ravens? I want to tell you, time and time and time again in my life, I've experienced the ravens. Oh, be thankful this morning for the natural supply. God doesn't always send the ravens. He expects us to scoop out the water through our own effort. But sometimes God sends the ravens. How thankful we ought to be. Our God owns the cattle on a thousand hills. And He's Jehovah Jireh. He can meet your need and mine. I was reading some time ago in the early days of Dallas Theological Seminary. There was a serious financial crisis and they got to the point if they didn't have enough money for a certain day, it was going to endanger the life of the college. And in those days, the president of the college was a guy by the name of Lewis Sperry Schaefer. Some of you have got his books. And he would be visited by Harry Ironside. And Ironside happened to be on the college on this particular day. And Schaefer and Ironside and a few others had shut themselves into a room and they were praying. And Ironside prayed what became one of his famous prayers. He said, "Lord, You own the cattle on a thousand hill. Lord, won't You sell some of Your cattle and send us the money?" He had no sooner prayed that prayer than the secretary of Dr. Schaefer came to the door and said, "Sir, there's someone to see you." And a Texas Ranger came in and he said, "I'm a Texas Ranger man. I own a great deal of cattle and I don't know what has come over me, but God told me to sell the cattle and give You the money. Here it is." And it was the exact amount they needed to alleviate the crisis. Jehovah Jireh, the Lord, will provide when we are there. But then we can't always live in the Raven Hotel. Sure we can't. We can't always live in fantasy land. Remember, this is boot camp. This is military training. And times of military training and testing are required courses in God's character-building curriculum. For look at verse 7. "And it came to pass after a while that the brook dried up because there'd been no rain in the land." Are you getting the steps? An assignment. The word of the Lord. A concealment. The will of the Lord. An encouragement, the wealth of the Lord. A development, the wisdom of the Lord. For here's an incident that changes the situation. The brook dried up. "But Lord, You've told me to come here. And I've come here so swiftly and so trustingly." What was God doing? Something very painful. The brook dried up. Does that sound familiar to you this morning? At one time you knew the joy of a full bank account. At one time you knew the joy of a booming business, an exciting career, an expanding career, a wonderful ministry, a happy marriage, a lucrative job, robust health, but the brook dried up. And could it be this morning that you're sitting by the drying brook of popularity, of decreasing friendships, of failing health, whatever it is? It's painful. Has God forsaken you? Has God left you alone? Not for a split second. You ever look at the palms of your hands? Imagine they're God's hands. Imagine you're right there this morning. The Amplified puts Isaiah 49 this way. "I have indelibly imprinted, tattooed a picture of You on the palms of each of my hands." My picture doesn't look very good, but yours will look a bit better. A picture of You on the palms of my hand. And you know, God doesn't have to frown.
He doesn't have to look around and saying, now where did Dennis go? I've misplaced that man again. No, I'm right there in the palm of his hand, and so are you. And so when you and I end up beside a drying brook, he never has to admit, now why did he end up there? No, God says, that's right. That's right. That's exactly where I want you. I haven't forgotten you. I haven't failed you. I haven't forsaken you. I just want you to trust me instead of the brook. Trust me instead of the brook. It came to pass after a while, or it came to pass literally at the end of the day.
See, the Lord was not only leading Elijah to Cherith to something, to this development that was very, very painful, but very purposeful. If I were to ask you, where does faith develop best? We don't like it. But my faith develops best in the crucible. My faith develops best when my back is against the wall. My faith develops best when God puts me into those difficult circumstances. I mean, how would you have responded to a drying brook? I'll tell you what I would have done. I'd have probably got out a road map and I'd look for every water hole in the area. My motto would have been, well, don't just sit there. Do something. Here's Elijah by the drying brook. And can you imagine what he must have thought? How come this brook is drying up? I mean, what caused that? And finally it dawns on him that the brook is drying up because he prayed. He prayed earnestly that it might not rain. And it rained not on the earth for the space of 3 years and 6 months. And the dried up brook was a direct result of Elijah's prayers. He was living in the result of his own prayer. Have you ever had that happen? Of course you have. Lord, make me a godly man. Lord, I want to be a Christ-like woman. In your heart you're thinking, but don't let it suffer. Don't let me hurt too much. Lord, would you make me stable? Would you make me long-suffering? Would you make me patient? But Lord, please don't remove too many of my creature comforts. Have you ever bargained with God like that? Have you ever said, Lord, give me patience and I want it right now? We want instant maturity. Not the kind that requires sacrifice, hardship, pain, emotion. But then God's spiritual boot camp doesn't work that way. It's designed for my development towards maturity, not for my comfort. Elijah went to Cherith as an energetic spokesman for God. Why, he was Jehovah's champion. He's full of the fire of God, and God takes him down to Cherith. And he emerges from Cherith as a deeper man of God. All because he was cut down to size beside a brook that dried up. I wonder, is the Lord cutting you down to size? Don't despise the educational experience of the drying brook. Dear friend, don't throw in the towel. Let patience have her perfect work, that you may be mature and complete. The Lord just wants you, like his son, trust him. May the Lord bless his word to all of our hearts.